Destination Freedom. Station WMAQ presents Destination Freedom, dramatizations of the great democratic traditions of the Negro people, a part of the pageant of history and of America's own Destination Freedom. Today, we tell the story of William H. Hasty, governor of the Virgin Islands, in a chapter entitled, The Boy Who Beat the Bus.
Once upon a time in the town of Knoxville, Tennessee, there lived a boy named William Hasty, who had 3 miles to go to get to school. And on the first morning, he tried to ride the bus and waited his turn.
Fast, please. Fast, please.
Here, driver.
Thank you, ma'am. Hey, where you going, boy?
You got my fare.
I got your fare, but you're getting in the wrong seat.
Wrong seat?
Now, you've been in Knoxville long enough to know better. You're Mary Hasty's boy, ain't you?
I am.
Well, then forget you are and sit where the good Lord intended for you to sit, in the rear.
I pay the same fare. I'll sit where I please.
Not if you want to get to school. Hey, where you going? Hey!
Well, he's getting off. He's getting right off.
Now, them colored kids is crazy. All set? Here we go.
And when the bus started, the boy was on the road behind it, running with all his might, trying to beat it to school. And it was that way each morning, and the passengers watched the uneven race, and the driver would shake his head.
Now don't stick your necks out of the windows, folks. Them colored kids is crazy, plumb crazy. He'll get tired and get on. He'll get tired.
But the weeks wore on, and the same boy was running and losing his race with the Jim Crow bus.
Say, ain't that the same kid we saw yesterday, driver?
He's crazy, I told you, man.
Well, what's he running for when he can ride? Exercise?
He sure runs fast for a crazy boy.
I know his people. They ain't got all that's coming to him.
Well, look at him. Maybe the poor boy ain't got bus fare. Did you ever think of that?
Now, sit down, please, folks.
Sure, maybe he can't pay. Hey, kid, what's his name?
It's Bill Hasty.
Hey, Sam, here's a nickel. Catch the next bus. Here.
The nickel flipped in the dust in front of the boy. He stepped on it and kept running.
Did you see that? Paid no attention to it. The kid's old Eddie Hasty's kid. He's batty. Now sit down, will you, folks? Sit down.
Sit down? When the kid's running his tongue out, he's trying to catch a bus.
That's right. Conductor, stop the bus.
Now see here, I know this kid's game.
Now you give him a chance to get on, you hear? Stop the bus now. Stop it
right
now.
All right, I'll stop it. All right.
The bus came to a reluctant stop and waited for the boy to catch up. He did. And ran past it.
Ran right past us. Did you see that? You satisfied?
And the boy would run along the Tennessee road until he came panting up to the school. But never quite in time to beat the last bell or to get there before school had started.
Is that you, William?
Yes, Mr. Whipple.
Every day it's the same thing. Yes, Mr. Whipple. Always late. Don't you ever get tired of it?
I do.
You do? Do you leave the house on time?
Yes, sir.
Then you stop on the way.
No, I run all the way.
Yes, you look it. Come inside. I'm going to make an example of you.
How about that?
Attention, please. Attention. You've all seen William Hasty running to school. The whole town has seen him. Well, William is here to tell you why he's unable to get to school on time and why he runs all the way. Go ahead, William.
Well...
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I can't ride the Knoxville bus.
Of course you can.
The bus segregates white and Negro riders. My mother says it's wrong. She says we should never ride in a Jim Crow bus.
Well, that's very, very noble of your mother. But there's the matter of being practical. Segregation is the law. State law.
Well, she says we should ride. and I believe him.
And what good would that do?
Well, then the bus company wouldn't make enough, and I would have to ride everyone as equals. I'll stop running.
The students took the hasty boy's advice, and the next 2 weeks, the bus ran half empty, and the students of Knoxville High ran alongside it.
Hey, he's multiplied. He's got 20 kids with him. Yesterday, he had 10.
I told you them kids is crazy, plumb crazy.
And the class boycotted the bus, and the teacher waited impatiently for a showdown with Mrs. Hasty.
Mrs. Hasty, this boy of yours has got the whole colored section of town running to school, and late. How do you expect him to learn enough to graduate?
If he's learning to fight illegal segregation, Mr. Whipple, I'm satisfied.
Madam, we're qualified to teach the boys what's legal and what's illegal.
I'm qualified to teach him right from wrong.
But the boy's got to be practical. Segregation is the state law, and it's constitutional.
I don't believe it is.
I see. And how do you intend to prove that?
I'm raising my son Bill to prove it. Hereafter, he'll be to school on time. He'll start earlier. He'll run faster.
Bill Hasty ran faster and outstripped the class and became known in the town as the boy who wouldn't catch the Jim Crow bus. And at the dinner table in the evening, his father wondered and was worried.
Grace.
Yes, Joe. Coffee?
No. I was thinking of William here and this passion you're instilling in him to fight segregation. The boy's now ready to enter college now.
And he's made a good record.
I wasn't thinking of that. I was thinking he has a reputation around town already that'll be hard to live down.
Hard to live up to is the way I'd put it.
Put it any way you want. You've kept him from obeying the Jim Crow laws, but he's got to live with the world the way it is.
Or change it.
He can't always run away from Jim Crow buses. Getting older. There's no money to send him to college.
He'll make it.
Can't even get work to help earn his way.
Every colored boy has to face that. But Bill is going to try to get a job anyway.
You're not sending the boy to buck his head against a brick wall again.
We'll teach him to fight for what's his, a job.
Look.
The boy's going to look for work.
You're teaching him to be a fighter, but it's an uneven fight, Grace. Either you or the boy will break before you've gotten anywhere. Boy, what do you think of all this? Or do you think?
Mother's right. I can't help the family, Father. I was called for a job at the Jarvis store.
Did they know you were Hasty?
I put it on the application.
It's not like putting your brown face before storekeeper John Jarvis. Don't count your job before you tell him you're Hasty.
Mr. Jarvis? I'm the boy you sent for.
Huh? You're who?
William Hasty. I sent in my application. Said you wanted a boy to work after school.
My company needs one. Sure needs one, but not that bad, eh, Clark?
We ain't exactly dying for help, boy. Not yet a while.
But you sent for me.
Tell him, Mr. Jarvis. He's green as a blade of grass.
Tell what? I need the job.
But I don't need no colored help, young'un. And ain't you the fellow who used to run the school?
Yes.
The old lady's been teaching you wrong. I've watched you since you growed up. Jim Crow too good for you. Well, now it's time you understood something. This store ain't hiring no colored boy. Now go. Get along, kid. Go catch that bus and be gone.
I told you, Grace. This is a Jim Crow town and you know it. They've got it in for the family.
Some folks got it in for any family.
They wouldn't let him work even if they needed him. He may as well learn to comply with the customs.
As long as I got breath in me, he'll learn to fight them.
When you're in Rome, do as the Romans.
When there are ways to fight evil, we'll take them.
Ah.
Bill?
Yes, Mother?
Give me some paint and a brush and an old piece of cardboard.
You can't change the way people think in this town.
How do you know it's the way most of the people think?
Because, well, who speaks against people like Jarvis? Nobody.
My son and I are going to. Segregation and discrimination may be the will of the state, but it's not the will of the people. Get me that paintbrush and cardboard, son.
What are you up to now?
I'm going to paint a sign to carry on my back.
A sign?
It's going to say, this store discriminates against workers because of their race. Do not patronize it unless you believe in race prejudice.
No one will pay any attention to you.
We'll walk the streets in front of that store until someone does.
Listen, Grace, it's cold and it's raining and you're not the strongest woman in Knoxville. Stay home. If you must fight against the storekeeper, let someone else do it first.
Who else will do it?
I don't know. But this isn't the time.
It's past time. William? Will you go with me?
The boy doesn't understand.
I do understand, Father. I'll get the paintbrush and make the signs, and I'll walk along beside you.
He got the cardboard and painted the words that warned the town that prejudice was like poison and that the Jarvis store contained an overdose of it. And through the rain, they walked, picketing the store, while the people passed and stopped to stare.
You see what that sign says, Joe?
Pay no attention to it. It's that hasty boy and his old lady. Let's go in.
Yeah, but nobody else is. They're just stopping and looking.
I tell you, it's just those hasties. Let's go in.
You're not going in there, are you?
Hey, you see there?
Here, you read the sign. You see what it says?
Yeah. Here comes old man Jarvis. Wonder what he'll do.
Woman, you're stopping my business with that crazy sign. Now get off the sidewalk before I call the law.
Call the law.
Look, ma'am, every store on the street discriminates against color, not just me.
And everybody in town's got a right to know about it. We're staying, mister.
You're drawing a crowd. Now, will you get out of here?
Will you change your policy?
The woman and her son walked the street, and the people of Knoxville answered and kept out of the store until the storekeeper called her out of the rain.
All right, you win. I'll change my policy. I'll put up a countersign saying any race can work here. Will that satisfy you?
It'll help.
You're setting your boy a bad example. You're putting wrong ideas in his head.
Maybe I am. If he'll live by 'em, we'll all be better off. We'll go home now.
And she took her son home. The rain had soaked through her clothes, but she told her husband of her victory.
George?
Yes, Grace?
George, we won.
Yes, Father. The man said he was changing. The man said he would... Mother?
Son, my back hurts.
Mother,
son.
What's the matter?
It's my back.
Catch her, son. Catch her.
Dropped to the floor from the pain. And in the future, the father had only cold words for his quiet son.
Your mother may never be well again. She spent all her days living so that you'd look up to her.
I know.
Is that all you have to say? All your life you've been quiet, too quiet. You're college age now. You'll be on your own. You've decided what you're going to do?
I'll be a lawyer.
I'd prefer you did something you could make a living by.
She taught me how to fight for a living. A fight.
Too bad she didn't teach you how to enter college without a cent.
She taught me that, too.
What are you talking about?
I ran 3 miles to high school every day. I think I can run a few miles in college.
And he went to Amherst College and told the coach he wanted a scholarship.
Scholarship? Lad, your grades are good for this southern school you come from, but why weren't you on the track team?
We didn't have a track team.
Then, lad, what makes you think you can run on a college team?
I had some practice.
You kids think you can get by on nerve. Tell you what I'll do.
Yes?
The team's winding up spring practice this evening. Just suppose you sort of get on your mark and run with them. Show me what you can do.
I'll be glad to. Thanks.
And Hasty.
Yes?
They'll be running the mile.
The mile?
I don't want you to strain yourself, lad. Try to find some gym shoes, and after the boys lap you twice, just take your rest. Understand?
Yes, I understand.
Get on your mark. That's set. Ready?
And he was off. And when the race was over, the coach had some serious talk for the president of Amherst.
Sorry to break in on you like this, Chief, but a crazy kid named Hasty just broke the college, the state, and the national mile records, and wearing high-top shoes. Never been on cinders before. Says he's been practicing by running against buses. They've certainly got some strange customs down below that Mason-Dixon. Think we can give him that scholarship?
The president thought so, and the legs that had never quite beat the Knoxville bus broke the sprint records and took him through Harvard Law School and a step closer to the fight his mother had begun. And they carried him to Washington, to the Houston Brothers Law Office.
William Haste is your name. I've never heard of it.
I've never had a case.
Well, my firm doesn't usually bother with beginning lawyers. What type of law do you specialize in?
Only in constitutional law, in civil rights cases.
Hmm. Criminal law is where the money is, young man.
Constitutional law is what I intend to practice, sir.
Stubborn. Well, if you're serious about this, suppose you join up. Not with my firm, but with me. My work with the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People.
They need a lawyer?
They need lawyers who know every phrase in the Constitution and who can stop some of the states from punching holes in it. There's not much money to be made. You'll never get to be governor.
I don't expect to be.
But you might be able to find cases that'll break some worn-out laws. Take the one in North Carolina that pays white teachers low salaries and Negro teachers lower ones. Now get a good case on that. Convince the court that the law's unconstitutional, and you're on your way. To what, I can't say, but you'll be on your way.
And the new lawyer went on his way to North Carolina and met his first plaintiff in a school for veterans.
I'm the instructor, Brooks. You're Hasty?
Yes.
You wanted me to show you about the school.
Please. I understand the state salary for teachers here is lower than salaries in other schools for veterans.
That's true.
And is the work here the same?
I've never seen the work in other schools, but...
Brooks!
I'm right here, Edwards. I'm sorry, Hasty, but I promised this student I'd help him with his hands. He's having trouble.
Go right ahead.
I've been trying to use my hands all day. Mm-hmm. The way you said. I can't make them work anymore. I can't.
It's your eyes that are blind, soldier, not your fingers. You were a typist before the war. You can type now. Hold it. Here's the chair.
Every time I try to do something, I tremble. I don't know why.
Here's the typewriter in front of you. Just put your fingers on the guide keys.
Just the right place.
Let me make sure. Uh-huh. I'll shift the carriage back and put in some paper. There. Now go ahead and practice. Try it. See, even if you are blind, you still type very well.
Yes, I can. It's been so long since I've touched it. Maybe I could go on to school, like you said.
Sure, we've already sent in your application, and they'll take you.
Gee, I can't thank you for this. Here, will you read back what I typed?
No, you go on typing. I've got a guest. So you see, Attorney Hasty, that's what I'm doing all day here.
It's very well. But why didn't you read back what he had typed? Against the rules?
No. You see, I'm blind, too.
And the Supreme Court heard the case and declared...
It is the unanimous opinion of this court that the state law of North Carolina that pays one wage to white teachers and a lower wage to Negro teachers for the same amount of work is unconstitutional.
And in 10 years, he helped bring decisions against all white primaries and vote frauds. And he took his skill to Howard University and settled down to teach what he had learned and was dean of the law school. Until the war began and Houston heard of a bigger job.
Well, Trackman, you can just pick your cases now. What'll it be?
I'd like to start fighting segregation.
There's a lot of it to fight.
On the bus lines.
You got any evidence?
Plenty. I'm going back to my hometown. I'm going to see if I can beat that Jim Crow bus this time.
It is the opinion of this court that racial segregation in interstate travel is plainly unconstitutional and against public policy. The Supreme Court, therefore, reverses the decisions of the lower court.
You know, teaching law in a university is no job for someone who wants to fight segregation.
I'm training a lot of other fighters, and I've been pretty lucky.
Well, people seem to think your skills wasted. They're recommending you for the War Department.
What are you talking about?
This. In the last war, segregation of army troops set off a number of pretty damaging mutinies. You know more about segregation than any lawyer alive.
Possibly.
The army's looking for a civilian aide to the Secretary of War. Someone to advise them on the best way to integrate Negro troops in the service.
What can I advise? The Army has its own regulations.
Well, there's a chance that you might be able to prove that they've got to change some of the old regulations.
There might be a chance.
As civilian advisor to the Secretary of War, you will have that chance to promote the best way of handling soldiers. Of course, you'll be target for every critic in the country, but think it over. And if you decide to take it, drop in and see the generals.
The dean thought it over and went up to see the general.
We're hoping you'll accept the position, Dean Hasty. It's going to be a new experience for the Army.
It'll be a new experience for me. I understand that all matters relating to the handling of Negro troops will come to me to be tested.
Yes, yes. We've got a morale problem. We've got to show the American soldier that what he's fighting for is worth giving his life for, if necessary. Your job is to find where morale's sagging and why.
I see. I've never been around the Army much.
You can live the life like a regular recruit if you care to. Review the camps, and wherever you see the shoe pinching, report it.
And the dean went through the recruiting stations, lived in the camp as a recruit, and first felt the shoe pinch as he took his tired platoon into a nearby town when he entered.
Hold up, fellas. We're a long way from our camp. Maybe we can put up in a club around here.
Gee, I don't know. I've seen friendlier towns than this.
Well, the Army rules say they...
Rules, sure, but reason comes first. I'm tired.
You're right. There's a service club in this burg.
My dogs are barking. Let's find it. Come on.
And the investigator took his men into the club of a southern town.
Here's the club. Hey, the door's not locked. Let's see. Say, this is all right. Come on, fellas. Come on in.
Hey, wait a minute. What are you guys barging in here for?
Just a minute, Captain. My men need to be put up here a while.
This club's only for white soldiers. Regulations.
Regulations.
You heard me.
When our men go to the front, the bombs won't be regulated to kill only white soldiers. We can't regulate clubs to serve just one race. We're staying.
You're getting out.
Yeah, Captain, if you want these guys thrown out.
Just try it, wise guy, try it.
All right, we'll show you.
Hold it, men. Hold it.
I don't know who you are or what you're looking for, mister. But if trouble starts, you know the consequences.
I know the consequences of keeping men segregated. A few years of life like this, and they feel they are natural enemies.
This is the way most of the men like it. This is the way it's going to be.
And the civilian aide traveled throughout miles of camps to see if most of the men liked the Jim Crow Army. And he found the shoe pinched on Guadalcanal, where a Negro Seabee said...
Take this down for your report, mister. We don't mind sweating it out for a few years. But we don't want people planting the seeds of segregation back home while we carry the torch of liberty.
A mess attendant on an airplane carrier said...
Here's what I say, mister.
Why can't there be other jobs on ship for Negro sailors beside mess attendants? Did this guy, Dory Miller, die for nothing? Ask him, mister.
And the civilian aide talked to a Southern Army officer who said...
I used to think the best way was to separate the Negro soldiers from the whites. Well, now, I'm not so sure. When the men get to know each other, there's not much trouble between them. You can quote me.
And out from the camps and below the Mason-Dixon line, the civilian aide wrote down what the men said. And he sent in his recommendations.
And I recommend that all assignments in the American Armed Forces be made without reference to race or color. That promotions be made to all races as their right for their part in the fight for freedom.
He sent it to the generals and went back to his post and waited. And finally, the answer came.
The war department's decided to reject your recommendations against segregation. Instead, we've integrated Negro flyers into the Air Corps on a segregated basis.
But you see what happened where segregation is the rule.
It's the decision of the department.
Then you have my resignation.
You're not serious about giving up a position of civilian aide, are you, Hasty?
What else do you expect me to do?
Well, look, key positions like that aren't tossed away.
I can't compromise with segregation for a job.
I see you mean this.
I've always meant it.
You're killing your political career.
Let the career die. Let me go back to teaching law as it should be.
He went back to the law schools and was training more students to understand the nature of the American Constitution when Houston brought another message.
I've got some more news for you, Hasty. The Department of Interior has heard about your resigning. The secretary would like to see you. It's about a new position.
What kind of position does a man get who won't approve segregation?
I think you'd better look into it and find out.
He went to find out. And he sat down with the Secretary of the Interior.
I've heard your report against segregation. My department thinks you should be commended for speaking the truth. In fact, we think that a man with your experience in fighting segregation since the first day he could run, and who knows constitutional law so well, can help out in one spot that needs a good administrator.
Where is that?
The Virgin Islands. We'd like for you to take over the job of governor there.
Governor?
Yeah, on the map. Out there in the Caribbean are 50 islands that have waited 20 years for an administrator who could handle them. Tough job. A job that only one who believes in democracy can do. Well, I'd like for you to take it.
If Congress approves, I'll take it.
I think it'll be approved. Good luck, Governor.
The appointment was approved, and he went out to apply his brand of freedom to the Virgin Islands. The boy who would not ride a Jim Crow bus rode across the Caribbean to become his country's first Negro governor.
You have just heard Destination Freedom's dramatization of the story of William H. Hasty, governor of the Virgin Islands. Destination Freedom is written by Richard Durham and produced under the direction of Homer Heck. The role of Governor Hasty was played by Fred Pinkert. Others were Geraldine Kay, Oscar Brown Jr., George Kluge, Jack Lester, Charles Mountain, and Jess Pugh. The special music was composed by Emil Soderstrom and played by Elwin Owen and Bobby Christian. This is Hugh Downs inviting you to be with us again next week at this same time when Destination Freedom will tell the story of Hazel Scott. ¶¶ This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.